Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Payne, Pendergast, and McLean for the next hour. John McLean in with us for his weekly visit. 8 o'clock hour every Wednesday. He's brought to you by hornsolutions.net. And for a guy who went to the Astros game last night and braved the elements, John McLean looks awfully rested today. John, how are you?
It was a great trip. A lot of people were there. It was a bigger crowd than I thought it would be, considering the weather. But I'm guessing maybe it's because it was Hot Dog Tuesday and Justin Verlander.
As someone who has covered sports and been a Houston sports fan for the last four decades, how would you compare your anticipation level of a Verlander start compared to other elite pitchers that have hurled for the Astros?
Well, there wasn't anything like, you know, watching Roger Clemens at that point of his career. Carol and I went to a lot of games in which he started, but Verlander's right up there with him. I've been going to Astro games since 62 when they were the Colt 45s. And even if you go back over the greatest pitchers in franchise history, I told Carol last night, I said, yeah, lucky we are to get to watch two Hall of Fame pitchers here in a 14-year period. And it's special. And I wish I could go tonight. I tried to talk her into going, seeing Garrett Coles, but she's afraid it's going to be raining even worse and flooding. And so she said no, but boy, we had a great time watching that game.
You know, what's cool about Verlander and how much he pulls? It just always reminds me of why I like baseball managers and baseball GMs talking to the press so much more than football. I remember Luno talking about acquiring pitchers at the deadline and how you do factor in what's their pull at the gate. Like but they talk openly about, I feel like in football, no GM would ever admit anything like that. Cause no, it's all about winning.
Sure.
That's all we care about.
Yeah, guerrilla warfare.
Where Luno.
Survival.
They're pretty upfront about saying, look, you gotta make money on the guy too. And with Verlander, that's what he brings to the organization. That's why the organization will always appreciate Verlander even more than the fan, because it's above and beyond just the actual performance on the field. He makes money for them.
Yeah.
On a Tuesday, you get that pull, and they can take the loss on the hot dog.
His numbers are better than the year he won the MVP in 2011.
I told you.
ERA is a little lower, and he had more wins that year. He went 24-5. Better whip, more strikeouts per nine innings. John, if you had a Cy Young vote, who would you vote for, Verlander or Garrett Cole?
Verlander, I think, because he wrapped it up, I thought, with a no-hitter. Yeah. Unless he collapsed after the no-hitter. To become one of six? I mean, is it that has at least three?
Yeah, it's a short list.
And so Cole's pitched great, too. Cole, we better enjoy it while we can, because he's not going to be back here. He'll be somewhere, I'm guessing, the Angels. And it's a pleasure watching those guys pitch. And it's funny, Greinke started to pitch better, but he still pales in comparison to those two because they're power pitchers who get a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah.
And the best thing about the Astros right now was Wade Miley bouncing back from two of the worst appearances in baseball history.
Yes.
One-third of an inning, 12 earned runs. And so that was good to see him bounce back. So they're tied with the Yankees. This is so exciting, going down the wire with 10 games left to see who gets home field advantage in the American League and Major League Baseball.
John McLean in studio with us for his weekly visit. All right, John, this is the first chance we've had to talk with you since the Jags game on Sunday. I guess if you're going to bring your C-minus game or so, better that you get out of there with a win against the Jags. What do you make of Bill O'Brien's answers to all the clock management stuff at the end of the half?
Well, first of all, he should have used a timeout when DeAndre Hopkins caught his pass, his 7-yard gain on 3rd and 5. Would have saved 20 seconds for when Watson held the ball too long on the next to last play, then it wouldn't have mattered. They would have had plenty of time left. But Bill's hard-headed. He's stubborn, and he's not going to admit publicly that he should have called a timeout there when everybody could see he should have.
You know what? We did a little mock press conference yesterday, John, where I basically informed Jack Easterby so Jack Easterby could tell Bill O'Brien, this is how you handle that situation with a proper explanation, because you're not going to change anybody's mind about the fact that you should have called a timeout, because you should have. But nobody, like, you could explain it thusly. One, look, we liked the matchups we had out there on the field. We liked that our offense versus that defensive personnel. If we called a timeout, we would have, the Jaguars could have had time to swap out their personnel. At the time, the Jaguars were in nickel. They had two linebackers out there. So we liked that. And then the second part is that, frankly, we need to be better at the whole operation. We need to be moving more quickly and more urgently. That's not necessarily a Deshaun Watson thing. That's an entire team thing. We have a lot of new elements on that team right now. Between young offensive linemen, between Kenny Stills, and then Deshaun Watson, there are a whole lot of moving parts. We weren't operating as quickly as we need to operate. I wish I had recognized that earlier. In hindsight, yeah, I should have taken the time out. But then at least it doesn't sound like you're flustered or a moron or anything. I don't think Bill O'Brien is a moron whatsoever. There are a lot of moving parts. It's just that sometimes you could give the fans enough credit to understand that, oh, yeah, oh, I see. Oh, these are the specific moving parts.
I think when he gives answers that make it sound like that there's a secret code of football that you have to be in football to know, I think that frustrates people. John, how do you think they've done about acclimating all these new parts, especially on the offensive side of the football?
I think that the offense was great in the first game. I thought the offense was stymied by the Jaguars' defense and their three deep coverage in the second one, and the defense played better, except right at the end. Now they're going to play a much better quarterback. I think the offensive lines played better. They're going to keep getting better and better. Receivers are good. Running game's good. There's no reason for them not to score more points. It's not, people are saying, well, they need to throw the ball more down the field. Well, what they do usually is dictated by coverage. And I can't remember how long that pass was that Fuller dropped.
It would have been a difference maker.
It would have, and I think that didn't the Jags score after that series?
They may have, yeah. I have to go back and look.
So that was a difference maker, and they had gains of 31 and 28 yards. But you don't just automatically start chunking it down the field if they're trying to take it away. But to beat the Chargers, they're going to need, because they struggle to beat good teams on the road, they're going to need to get the, and I wrote about this today, they got a great chance if they beat the Chargers to be 5-1 for the first time under O'Brien and the first time since their best start ever in 2012 under Gary Kubiak, that they got to beat the Chargers. And to do that, they're going to have to get the offense and defense on the same page.
John McLean in studio with us. Are you more encouraged after week two of J.J. Watt, even though J.J. has not put up a sack yet? What did you think of his performance against Jacksonville?
You know, when I went back and watched it in slow motion, he got doubled a lot, and sometimes he got blocked single. I don't have any problem with Watt's performance in the second game. He took the blame in the first game, but he's gonna have to get after it. And they asked me yesterday in the loop agree with them that Watt would get his first sack against the Chargers, and I said yes. Rivers, as a pure pocket passer, is not going to run out of sacks like Gardner Minshew did a terrific job of getting away, and they know where Rivers is going to be, so I would say, yeah, Watt will get his first sack.
I would like him to get one just because I saw a couple things in the game where he took some chances outside the scheme of the defense where he just abandoned his run responsibilities in case it was a bootleg. And where he just kind of just went to the left when everybody else was going to the right. And I don't know if he would have done that if he already had a sack.
Had a sack and a half.
I want him to get the sack out of the way so that stuff doesn't happen. Just go ahead and, because I feel like that might get more extreme the further you go along.
He doesn't go ahead, John.
Yesterday took Whitney Merciless when he had his record 12 sacks in 2015, I believe. I wrote this yesterday. He didn't get his first one until the sixth or seventh game, and then he had 13 in the last 12.
Yeah.
Well, and at least, look, if J.J.'s drawing all this attention, at least the guy who's on the other side is winning AFC Defensive Player of the Week. He's doing something with it.
He deserves it. He's off to a great start in a contract year, and the price of doing business with Whitney keeps going up.
John, do we have any idea when that cast is going to come off of Titus Howard's hand?
No idea. They don't tell us anything like that.
I thought it was a really good It was a very promising performance. He had a couple of his. The problem was his mistakes were really public and big mistakes. The tripping penalty. The one offsides. I don't think it was his fault. I think that was Nick Martin's fault. But it was just he had a couple bad plays in the second half that got a lot of press. Overall, I was actually pretty pleased with him, especially for a rookie.
Yeah, John, they seem to make a much more, to Seth's point, a much more concerted effort to get the rookies involved in week two than they did in week one.
You talking about just getting them in the game?
In general. I mean, they didn't have a single rookie play an offensive or defensive snap in week one, and they had,
Howard,
Menihue, Lonnie Johnson, and Gillespie all played varying roles, but all showed up on film, so to speak.
Well, Lonnie Johnson played because they moved Bradley Roby inside in the three-corner sets, and then Howard would have started the first game except for an injury. And Gillespie, boy, he pancaked somebody. I can't remember who it was. And all those guys that got a chance did a good job. Menihue reached out and knocked the ball out, which gave him a sack. And I think we'll see him again instead of Carlos Watkins.
Menihue?
Yeah.
We'll see him instead of Carlos Watkins. Yeah. They cut Trevor Daniel yesterday.
That surprised me because he had they didn't give up a long punt return because of a line drive punt. He had a 40.9 net. I don't know. I hope Brian Anger is a good holder because, you know, so much we kind of take for granted snappers and holders. John Weeks, I keep saying, is the best snapper in the league. He's never had a bad snap in 10 years. And the punters hold. And Anger, I guess, was good at it. He's been in the league 8 years. But that move yesterday surprised me. And Bill O'Brien will say, today we did it because we make moves that we think are in the best interest of the team. And Trevor Daniel will get a job pretty quick.
A lot of people, and a few listeners have pointed this out. I say a lot, but I think a lot of people do feel this way. They do like that. O'Brien, even though some people would characterize it as knee-jerk reactions, I think a lot of people like that O'Brien is taking action on things quickly instead of letting them linger or fester. I'm with that, too, especially with a punter. I don't give a damn. I really don't. If you're an awesome punter, when Shane Lechler was awesome, I loved having him. If you're an average punter, then I hope you're working on getting your master's degree, too, because I don't care if you have a job or not. Well, produce for me or you're gone.
You know, John, there's got to be a lot of Aggies going, that was the guy you cut Shane Lechler for.
Yeah, and he wouldn't cut Trevor Daniel if Brad Seeley didn't want to do it.
Right.
Seeley has a lot of influence with O'Brien. O'Brien admits that, so I'm sure Seeley wanted to make that move, and that's why they did it. It's just strange to do it so quick.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.